Our keynote speaker tonight is Janet R. Janet, as we, some of us learned earlier, resides part-time in Yuma and part-time in Iowa, where she's joining us from tonight. She's been in the program since 1976, and she's here tonight to share her experience, strength, and hope on our program theme, Act As If. And Emily is the meeting co-leader, and she, Janet, Emily will give you a 5-minute time cue. We have 5 minutes left. So please, let's give a warm welcome to Janet. And Janet, you may need to unmute yourself.
Where is Janet?
She's there. I just sent her in. There we go.
Good job. I am Janet. I am a food addict. Thank you. And I'm very grateful to be here. You know, the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. My abstinent date is April 9th, 1976. I walked through the doors. When I walked through the doors, I weighed 309 pounds. I drank a fifth of JB Scotch every couple of days. Was full of fear, guilt, anger, frustration, hopelessness, self-pity. Just before I walked through the doors here, I had lost 80 pounds in another program, basically on Xlax water pill suppositories, and I gained 120 pounds in less than a year. And I was weighing in at the other program, and the person weighing me in at the other program told me there was a new game in town called Overeaters Anonymous. That's how I got here, full of fear, full of guilt, full of anger, and just hopelessness and self-pity and hating myself, and I failed one more time. For me, I walked through the doors, old school, gray sheet, 3 meals a day, no sugar, you get a sponsor, you do the book, you do the steps, and it saved my life. I have never in 45 years gotten far enough from the rooms to question if I'm a food addict or not. I have never left the rooms. I've never lost my abstinence. I lost 120 pounds, and I have maintained 120 pound weight loss for 43 years. Where before I came into program, I'd lose 20, gain 40, lost 40, gain 60. Last time, lost 80, gained 120. I could never maintain because of the compulsion and the addiction and the obsession. I came into a 12-step program, and they offered me hope, you know, and stuff. And I usually, easiest way for me to share my experience, strength, and hope is to run you through the steps, because I'm a step person. I believe that the reason I'm in a 12-step program is to live the 12 steps, and it is what has changed my life, gave me a spiritual awakening, took away the obsession, the compulsion, the addiction, the drive to do things I didn't want to do. So when I came in the program, I used to read step one is I admitted I was powerless over my husband and my kids to become unmanageable. You know, that was the way I read it. I was always trying to fix outside issues. I did not know I had a physical allergy and a mental obsession. I didn't know it. I got into the big book, I got into the rooms, and they just explained that physical allergy is an abnormal reaction. My body doesn't process sugar like other people's bodies do. I didn't know that. I was trying for years until I got into program to treat an allergy and a mental obsession with doorknob pullers, cabbage soup, another diet, a shot, a pill, X-lax, AIDS, whatever it was. Because I didn't even know what the problem was. You know, when I walked in, my life was a mess. Emotionally, physically, relationship-wise, marriage and everything else. So I justified everything I did by what they were doing. Because I thought the problem was my husband and my kids. I thought the problem was always outside stuff. I listened to a speaker once in a different program, and it was Saturday night, and he was a Marine, and he needed to get over to the base alcohol store to buy some alcohol before it closed and stuff. And he went to put on his shoes, and he had knots in his shoes. He finally got the knots out, got the shoes on, jumped on his bike, pedaled over, got the alcohol, came back, sat down at his desk, took a big swig of alcohol, and then he said, something's got to change. He says, I need to get loafers. See, and that's how I used to think. It was not me. It wasn't the situation. It was I needed to change whatever was causing me that pain, you know. And after, when I came into program and I had the truth, which my God revealed to me, that I had an allergy and a mental obsession. And I knew that with the allergy, if I never put it in, I never had to deal with it. But the mental obsession, I knew, I don't know why I knew it, but I knew the only way to take care of the mental obsession was the steps. I had sponsor when I came in. I had a couple sponsors, and I used to, if I wanted self-pity, I'd call up this one sponsor, because I'd call her up and tell her what was going on, and she'd say, oh, Janet, you have it so bad. And I said, yes, I do. I have it bad, you know. And then when I wanted to get well, I'd call the other sponsor. And she'd say, it is what it is, Janet. Now what? And she taught me one of the greatest lessons. She said, you're going to go through it, Janet. How you go through it is your choice. How you go through it isn't going to stop the fact that you're going to go through it. You know, and so the sponsors that took me through the steps and through the book, and they walked me and they listened to me and stuff. But I found out, for me personally, I found out I always chose which avenue I wanted to take. If I wanted to walk into the solution, I knew who to go to and where to go. And if I wanted to stay in myself, I knew where to go there too. Step two, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could take the fat off my body. That's all I was looking for. You know, my life was a mess, and my relationship was a mess. My marriage was a mess, but all I wanted to do was to not be fat. You know, when I came in the program, I couldn't, like, to turn the steering wheel on the car, my stomach stuck to the steering wheel, so I, you know, and the seat was back as far as it went. I had to have my rings cut off because I gained weight so fast that year. You know, broke down chairs, was everything that goes with severe obesity. And I was severely obese all my life. You know, my mom had to have my clothes especially made in grade school because back then they didn't make my size. And I started at diet doctors, even though they weren't called that. When I was 8 years old, we went to the family doctor, and if I lost weight, he'd give me a quarter as a reward to go get a malt. And if I gained weight, I didn't get a quarter. So I learned the good, bad reward system way early in my life. You know, so I dealt with the self-hate and the self-loathing of not only the obesity, but not being able to stop, you know, eating against my will, swearing I'll never do it again. I'll start Monday, right after the wedding, right after this, I will start. And then I would be good for whatever it was, 10 pounds, 5 pounds, maybe a day, maybe a half a day. You know, so when I took step two, truthfully, it was like, okay, you know, and came to believe it's an event. It's a lifetime journey is what it is. Come to believe there's something somewhere that is capable of setting me free. You know, and the sanity, the voice, you know, like I say, I came in with a whole bunch of voices. We're down to two or three. We get along, so I really don't have a problem with the people that are with me now. But the voices that would lie to me, and I'd believe the lie. Somebody in program once, you know, who I was up somewhere doing a retreat, and anyway, they said, what did your disease voice tell you to do, and what did you do about it? And she says, I hide M&Ms underneath my pillow. And I think, well, that's no big deal. And then she says, and I live alone, you know, and that I so related to that, because I was even trying in denial and to hide the stuff from myself, because I could not face the truth about myself and how I used food. You know, I stole food. I stole money to get food. I drove out in blizzards. I mean, from Iowa, so I drove out in blizzards to get food. I've done everything the obsession told me to do, you know, and stuff. So I came into a program, and what I had hope in was you, because you shared it was possible. You shared that you walked free. You shared that that compulsion, that obsession, that drive had left you. And I really believe that if it happened for you, that maybe it could happen to me. And you told me you did the steps, so I was willing to give it a shot. You know, we got to step three. I made a decision to get rid of my husband and my kids so that I'd feel better. You know, all of my decisions were self-motivated out of my self-hate, out of my obesity that ran my life. And when I got to step three, it was like made a decision to turn my food and my fat over to God. You know, because, again, all I wanted was to lose weight one more time. I knew it wouldn't stick because it never did stick, and I always gained back. But I made a decision, okay, God, we're in this together. I'm going to go for it. And long before I got to program, one night before program, I was hurting so bad and so much guilt, so much fear, so much pain from my compulsion and my addiction that was destroying my life. I cried out to God and I said, I don't know if you're real or not, but if you are, I want everything you have, or I'm not going to make the trip with you. And that God sent me to Overeaters Anonymous and 12-step program. You know, so when I got here, I realized I didn't even have anything to do with getting here. You know, they always say like, well, the obesity or the pain got you here. No, God got me here. I couldn't have set that up in any way, shape, or form. And then I got to step four where I made a searching and fearless moral inventory of every one of you so I could blame you, so I could judge you, so I wouldn't have to be accountable for myself. You know, I never saw my patterns run by my self-loathing and my fear and my guilt and stuff. I never saw that because I was only so obsessed with the fat and the food. You know, if I eat only zero calories, everything's good. So it was always obsession with the food, even when I was losing the weight. You know, so when I got into step four, I made a searching and fearless moral inventory. All of a sudden, I'm starting to look at me. You know, all of a sudden, my sponsor had me, hey, look at your resentments, look at your fears, look at your angers, look at what's driving you to eat all this stuff. Look at what is fueling your obsession and your compulsion. You know, and I didn't want to do that, but I wanted what they had so bad I was willing to do it. You know, and I took a four step. I've taken many four steps. The only reason I've taken many four steps is I found out different four steps verbalize it differently. And when stuff is verbalized differently, I have a new understanding and a new perception. So the only reason I do that is like it might be something that four step will show me that I missed in the other one. You know, and like the resentments, I resented so many things, you know, and I didn't even know it. I was so full of self-loathing and self-hate that I didn't know, I didn't even know what a resentment was. And I didn't know it was fueling my eating, my actions, my attitude, my feeling, my emotions, everything and stuff. I knew none of this. I was living this life and knew none of this. And in step five, it says you admit to God, you admit to everybody in the world the exact nature of your wrongs. You know, if I could just gossip about you, if I could tell you how bad it is, you know, and just admit to you. But in recovery, when I got to step five, I knew the truth about me. I was starting to see stuff I had never seen before. I received the gift of awareness. Janet, this is really you. And by the time I got to step five, I had a God in my life that I could go to and admit to and talk to. By the time I got to step five, I knew how to process some things by myself. And by the time I got to step five, I started to trust another human being enough to be honest. See, I know that each step equips me for the next step. I can't do the next step until I do the first step to equip me for the next step. So the first four steps equip me for the fifth step, where I could get honest, admit the truth, which I do today on a daily basis. All of these steps are worked on a daily basis, and it's in the one time that I do it. Today I do step five. I admit to God, I admit to myself and another human being. I stay honest, I stay current. You know, and stuff. I say, you know, like if I took a fifth step this week, but I say, you know, if you take a fifth step, you know, we admit we committed adultery, or we killed somebody, or we abused our children, but don't ask me what I ate for lunch. You know, you're going in my territory, you know. And when I am still on the defensive in the area, any area of my life, I'm not going to walk free. And then I got to step six. We're entirely ready to have God remove your defects of character. Because if you shape up, I wouldn't have any problems, because you're my problem. If you didn't do that, then I wouldn't have to do that. You know, so by the time I got to step six, I was aware of my defects of character. I was aware of my jealousy, my sensitivity, my judgment, my criticism, my lying, my controlling, my manipulating, my stealing, just a few of mine and stuff. And see, I was never aware of that before, you know, and I started to see, I came to a point in recovery through the rooms, through the sponsor, through the work. I came to a point in recovery where I no longer wanted to hurt others anymore. And I no longer wanted to allow others to hurt me. You know, so I was entirely ready. I started to see how useless the stuff, the way I was responding. In May, I had a hip replacement. So I was sitting in the house, and I healed by watching judge shows. Okay? And it's a perfect example. This girl was suing this guy. They were engaged, and he thought she committed adultery, so he burned her wedding dress. So she was suing for the price of the wedding dress, $185. And I'm sitting in my chair with my hip thinking, really, that's your solution for that problem? And then I always start to think of the steps. And that's who I used to be. My solution to a situation was to eat. My solution was to lie. My solution was to hide. My solution was all of my character defects gave me a solution that made absolutely no sense. You know, and so I can relate everything to step six, where my character defects, like him, he burnt that dress because he thought she committed adultery. You know, and also on the show, they took a lie detector test, and she hadn't. So the two of them looked at each other and went over and hugged, and sitting in my chair thinking, I wonder how this is going to work out. You know, but see, that's how I live my life. My solution was a pizza. My solution was to go to a buffet. My solution was to eat 10 sandwiches. My solution was to eat until I gained 120 pounds in 1 year. I did not have another solution until I got into a 12-step program and had a power greater than myself and the people in the rooms that made the journey before me. And then we got to step seven, where I humbly asked God to shape you up, because you're a mess. You know, it was that simple. By the time I got to step seven, I had a relationship with the power greater than myself, which I choose to call God, that I could ask. And I got to the point where it's like, oh God, I don't want to act like this anymore. I don't want to feel this way anymore. I don't want to think this way anymore. You know, somebody shared at a meeting about a year ago, and it was so perfect for me. I've been in program 45 years. I'm 79 years old. I sponsor people. I've never not been active in recovery. And I love what takes place here, you know. But I was at a meeting, and the guy was saying, he says, when I go to this restaurant, he says, I wait until the waitress turns around to tip, because I have to get recognition. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, when I go to a car lot or a car wash, I always wait for him to look at me to get recognition for tipping. And I was thinking, what in me needs recognition for doing the right thing? You know, so when I get to step seven, I'm so much aware of self, or I'm getting more aware of self, excuse me, because I wasn't aware for a long time. It's in the journey, folks. It's in the journey. But I became so aware of self, you know, it was like, oh my goodness, you can't even do the next right thing. You know, like when my sponsor and I would ask her, what's God's will? If I'm making the decision to share my will and my life over to the care of God, what's God's will? And she said, to live the St. Francis prayer. And it's like, wow, is it that simple? You know, is it that simple? But see, I had everything confused where it was so overwhelming, I couldn't even start. I sponsored somebody once and her house was so dirty, she was overwhelmed and couldn't start. And I said, make the bed and call me. Wash the bathroom sink, call me. Wash your dishes, call me. Put in a load of clothes, call me. So we walked through that whole day, probably 30 phone calls at least. And if she did it one step at a time, one thing at a time, it got done. But when she looked at it, it was so overwhelming, she was paralyzed. And that's how I was before recovery. There was no reason to start because it was so overwhelming. Step eight, made a list of all the people that had harmed me and become willing for them to make amends to me. You know, that's I had a long list of the people that had harmed me. And I would blame people again and justify and rationalize it. And then by the time I got to step eight, I had a list of people because I saw the truth that my actions, my attitude, my way of living, my defects in action, you know, and then I became willing to make amends to them. You know, step eight, when I first came in the program, I don't know, I heard it somewhere, you know, I have my step eight lips with my fourth step and I just take it over. So I thought, why do you even have a step eight? There's no reason for it. Step eight is so important, folks. You know, what do I do with the list? And also from the fourth step to the eighth step, believe me, I add to the list of the amends because I become more aware all the time. But what do I do with my eight step list? I take it to God. I examine it and see if it's honest and truthful. I talk it over with my sponsor. We make a plan for the ninth step. You know, it's so important, the eighth step, and a lot of people just walk over it like it's nothing. It's just a list. No. I mean, I have to be prepared for. And also, like I tell people, when you do your fourth step or your eighth step, you do it like there's no fifth step, sixth step, seventh step, eighth step, ninth step. You do the step you're on. Because like if you're doing an eight step and you think you're going to have to make amends, you'll leave some of the stuff off your list. So just do the step that's in front of you at the time and stuff. And the eight step list, I made it. I talked it over with my sponsor. I prayed about it. I got honest about it, which I didn't know I could or be capable of. And then I got step nine, which if you made direct to me, amends to me, unless you would hurt me, you know, and stuff. And I found out with step nine, you know, I got to be willing to make amends, but I also have to be willing not to make amends. You know, because I'm so selfish, I'd want to run around making amends just to feel better, and I will hurt you more. And then I'll end up making amends for my amends. You know, so I've learned in the years, you know, I had a list of people. I knew the people I'd harmed. And when I first started making amends, I had a daughter that fell down the basement step. And she was down the basement crying. And I said, what are you doing down there? Are you hurt? She said, no. And I said, well, then get your ass up here if you're not hurt. My daughter, who fell down the basement step, walked past me and apologized for falling down the basement step. I'm in program, and it takes me a couple hours to go to her and say, I'm sorry I yelled at you, but if you wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have done that. See, when I first started making amends, I just could not take responsibility. I still had to lay it back on you because I couldn't handle the feeling of I did wrong. You know, so learning how to make amends and to talk it over with God, talk it over with a sponsor, make a plan, go to the person and say, you know, this is what took place and what can I do to make it right? It took me a long time to get to that simplicity of it and stuff. You know, I have a lot of favorite amends. So one that isn't mine, this guy, and it's from another program, but anyway, it's the perfect example of making amends. But his mom was dying of cancer, and the family said he couldn't come to the hospital unless he was sober, and he couldn't stay sober, so he didn't go to the hospital. His mom died. Years later, he was in recovery, and he was in an elevator at a hospital with a sponsor and a nurse. And the guy that couldn't stay sober for see his mom got off the elevator, and the nurse said to the sponsoree, he's the greatest man I know. And the sponsoree says, why? And says, whenever we have someone that's dying in the hospital and has nobody to be with them, we call him, and he comes, and he's there for them. See, and so the depth of reality of what making amends is all about, you know, to the world, to the universe, to whatever, there is ways of doing it, you know. So it's more than I'm sorry and I hope you forgive me and I'm sorry and here's the money I stole from, or here's your money I stole from you. There's so much more to making amends, you know, and cleaning up the path, you know. Step 10, I continue to take your inventory and when you're wrong, make you admit it. Step 10, for me, step 10 is like relapse prevention. You know, step 10 is becoming aware of who I am today and being aware of my resentments, my fears, my anger, my jealousy, my judgment before they become active. Step 10 gets me there before I take action if I'm doing a step 10. Perfect example is I had a granddaughter at 15. I was in Arizona for the winter, and I got a call. And the call was my 15-year-old granddaughter was pregnant, you know, and stuff. And I talked to them and stuff. And then I was headed to a meeting a mile and a half from my house. And I walked into the meeting, and people said, how you doing? And I said, just found out my 15-year-old granddaughter. They're at 15. It's no big deal. Another guy said, look, my mom had me at 15. Look how great I turned out, you know. But anyway, by the end of the meeting, it was a baby. I can do a baby. I can do a baby. I can't do what the mile and a half did to me. No father, no college, no high school, no job, no nothing. In a mile and a half, I had her. So overwhelming, but with a 10th step, see, I can do a baby. So on a 10th step, on a daily basis, I defuse me. You know, I always think it's like, you know, those old pressure cookers where everything goes and you're ready to blow. And then you got to get a pizza or you got to go to the buffet or you got to go to the Dairy Queen, whatever it is, because you can't handle it. So you put food in your mouth to defuse you, or you buy something or whatever you're doing to find your comfort zone. Well, step 10 keeps me down here where I don't lose it. You know, I don't have to eat over it. I don't have to control, manipulate. I don't have to do it. You know, step 10 just keeps me where I belong. It's so important to me. You know, I believe that steps 1 through 3, I develop a relationship with God. 4 through 6 or 7, I develop a relationship with myself. 8 and 9, a relationship with others. Step 10, I maintain a relationship with myself. Step 11, I maintain a relationship with God. And step 12, I maintain a relationship with others. It's all about relationships, you know, and it's what me as a food addict brings into the picture and stuff. You know, so step 10 to me, if I'm aware of who I am, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling, what I want to do, how I react on a daily basis, I stay calm, I stay free, and I stay at peace. Step 11, I sat through prayer and meditation to get God to take the fat off my body. Because that's all I wanted. You know, I didn't even know I had an allergy or compulsion, so I wasn't praying over that. And I didn't even know that resentment, fear, anger, or all my character defects, all that stuff just drove me to eat more and more and fueled myself, self-pity and self-consumption. So by the time I got to step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to what? Improve my conscious contact with God. You know, by now I have a relationship with, somewhat of a relationship with power greater than myself. And to step 11, I'm just trying to improve that. I'm trying to get better acquainted. I'm trying to find out more about this God. In the AA 12 and 12, it says, if this God has restored you to some sort of sanity in this sorely troubled world, surely this God is worth knowing better. You know, all of our steps, the purpose of the 12 steps for me is to remove whatever hinders me from hearing, knowing, and doing God's will. So that I can have this spiritual awakening that the book says I have to have if I'm going to walk free. So step 11, sadhu prayer meditation, you know, contact with God as we understood him and praying for his will and the power to carry that out. 30-some years ago, I had a granddaughter, I'm a grandson that was born. He was severely, severely handicapped. He could never hold his head. He could never eat. He could never hold anything. He couldn't roll over. He could do nothing. But anyway, he was born down in New Orleans, and he was supposed to pass away in the hospital. And so we went down there, and I walked into the hospital, and I started to pray all my prayers. You know, God, do this. God, do that. Fix this, take care of this and all that. And I stood back and I looked at Jacob and I said, whoa, God, I've never had a Jacob. I don't know how to do a Jacob. I don't know how to do Jacob's parents. I don't even know how to pray a Jacob. You're going to have to show me how to do this. And God told me in that room, he said, Janet, he says, you've never done August 20th, 2021. You don't know how to do it.
Five more minutes, Janet. Five more minutes.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, so my whole prayer life changed. Instead of telling God what to do and how to do it and when to do it, I started to ask God, you know, what do you got going and can I tag along? You know, and so the relationship and the intimacy changed where my purpose of prayer wasn't to order God around, but to follow God around, you know, as he led. Step 12. You know, having lost 100 pounds as a result of these steps, and that's how I used to read it, you know, because that's all I wanted, you know, was to not be fat, period. But the book says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps, my book tells me I have to have a spiritual awakening, and my book tells me I get that as a result of the steps. And I carry this message. What message? I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps to other people, and I practice these principles in all of my affairs. See, today I know that each step has a principle, you know, honesty, hope, faith, courage, you know, service, integrity, love, and et cetera. Each step equips me with that principle. And then I go to that. I need to be equipped with that principle for the next step. So when I get to that next step, then that also equips me for the next step. So when I'm on step 12 and I'm carrying the message to other people, I have a message of hope, experience, strength, and hope. I've been in this program 45 years. I have not, the only time that, you know, I just need to share, you know, like, everything isn't always wonderful, but I don't use and abuse food. The obsession has been removed and has never come back. In 2011, my mom died November 2nd. 2 weeks later, on the 19th, my husband died. In 2014, I have four different kinds of cancer. I went through the chemo. They did another PET scan, found another cancer, sent me to the university hospital, and they did surgery on that. In 2017, I had a daughter die of anal cancer. In 2018, I had a daughter die of heart disease. In 2019, I was living with my sister after my husband died. She died in 2019. you know, and then other family issues that are just that simple. What I'm telling you is this program works. Outside situations I can walk through, and it never crosses my mind to think when one of my family members dies that food is going to fix it. Which before I got into recovery and into the program and into the steps, my only solution was to eat. My only solution and comfort was food. Today, it doesn't even cross my mind. The only time in 43 years, I've been in 45, lost the weight in the first year and a half, so in 43 years that I had any weight change was when I went through the chemo. And that was it. Otherwise, I've stayed exactly the same, where before I never stayed the same even for a day. I was either losing or gaining because the obsession ran my life. I know the hurt. I know the pain. I know the fear, and I know the guilt. But I know the freedom. I know the freedom from compulsion, addiction, obsession. I walk free today. Not only from the food, but from my hurt, my pain, my guilt, everything that drove my life before I got into this program. God and the 12 steps and the rooms and the fellowship have touched my life and changed my life. I live happy, joyous, and free today, no matter what's going on. I love you guys. I love you and thank you for this opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. This program is a life-saving program. I know that because I came in and it saved my life. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you so much. We love you. You have the opportunity to change all of our lives, the 111 of us on here, and we have the opportunity to impact those around us too. So thank you. It's now time to unfortunately close the session, but I want to remind you of a couple things. I put into chat here the link to our raffle. So we have our virtual raffle, as we heard earlier, includes many offerings, including a 50-50, gift cards, art by OA members, a condo in La Jolla, and so much more. So the raffle you can purchase tickets until 6 p.m. Tomorrow, Saturday, and the drawing will be tomorrow night at 6:45 after our keynote session. We would like to thank all of you for attending. And after a moment of silence, Martha, if you could share the OA promise up there, if you could, we could join virtual hands and read the OA promise together. Yes. I see you, Chris.
Give me 1 second, Richard.
All right. We got to grab hands anyways, Martha. So we're getting them. Oh, yeah, I see them all. I feel you. All right. Take a deep breath. All right. I put my hand in yours, and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer must we each depend on our own unsteady willpower. We are all together now, reaching out our hands for power and strength greater than ours. And as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams.